Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
Setting up the background between them as the makes it personal, but it also pulls in the considerable backstory both of them have and the different career paths. Kofi having moments but not getting the breaks. Orton, because as Kofi said, you just had to be Randy Orton. And there's a lot that you could unpack from that statement. You know, you're tall, you're muscular, you're white, you're an Orton, a third generation wrestler. You know, whatever it is, you can kind of read into what Kofi's saying however you want. But I thought it was a really good start to building up this match. I am glad we have a couple more weeks, though.
Yeah, I agree. And I also really liked sort of the bookending of Orton saying that, yeah, I was the one that held you down. But don't forget, Kofi, like, I'm also the reason that you're here.
Yes, the Ali thing, yep.
Oh, it was great because, you know, when Ali, you know, finally comes back, he's got sort of a built-in program with both of them, really, you know, with both Orton and with Kingston, you know, because Orton's the one that took him out of the match, and then Kingston's the one that kind of stole the moment that put him, you know, out of commission, basically. And so that should be exciting. A little later in the show, you know, Ali had what I thought was a pretty good babyface promo. We'll get to that in a minute. But yeah, I thought this was a good first chapter in what'll probably be, you know, I would think a couple, you know, maybe a couple show program between the two of them.
Yeah. I in terms of the SummerSlam lineup taking place, you know, they went out of their way to make the women the main event of WrestleMania. I still want to see SmackDown and Kofi main event a pay-per-view. Like, I really think that is a key to having Kofi's reign feel as important as it can and should. So is this an opportunity to do that, or do you have to do Seth Lesnar last because it's Lesnar, and for at least now Raw is the A brand, and Seth is the younger, bigger star than Kofi, arguably. Or is this a chance to say, yeah, guys, go out there. We're going to give you the last spot like we did the women. Give the WWE title instead of the Universal title that spot and take away what might be a letdown of a main event between Lesnar and Seth. I mean, it's possible Lesnar decides to, you know, work for more than 10 minutes and have a full-fledged competitive multi-chapter match, but that's not necessarily expected with Lesnar these days. So to me, this seems like an opening for that, and I'd like to see it.
I think now is definitely the time. You know, you had the Kofi showcase at Mania, but the women were in the position that they needed to be in at that time. I don't want to see a show closing Brock Lesnar versus Seth match because I just don't feel that the work rate's going to be there. And I think with their, you know, with their the AEW kind of coming on, they want to send a message that, you know, hey, this is where the top wrestlers in the country, you know, ply their craft. And I don't think you're going to get that out of main eventing your second biggest show with your part-time star that you pay way too much money to.
Yep. And I think for Kofi, this is the biggest opponent he's had, the biggest match he's had, and being at SummerSlam and the timing of it almost being on the 10-year anniversary of that memorable match that people have talked about ever since then, it feels like this is a good chance to do it. And I talk about match order a decent amount because I think it matters. I think it sends a message and a signal to fans how wrestlers are perceived. And I think that's part of the mosaic of what makes fans look at wrestlers a certain way, titles a certain way, TV shows a certain way. And it's not the be all end all, and you can't force the issue. You can't, you know, you can't put if Ziggler was SmackDown champion right now and he was feuding with Mike Kanellis, you can't headline SummerSlam with that based on what we know about both of them right now. Kofi Orton is not forcing it. It every bit deserves to be in that spot compared to Seth Lesnar, unless you just want to reinforce the idea that Lesnar is by definition a bigger deal than everybody else. And of course, his match is going to go on last if it's between that and a Kofi Orton match. Orton is a legacy star. Kofi, I think, is pretty red hot as a champion right now in the curve-based analysis of today's wrestling scene in WWE. So there's no reason not to do it.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think now's the time to really cement Kofi, you know, put him in that main event slot, bring some, you know, some legitimacy for anyone still not on the bandwagon with him to this title reign. You know, and putting him in there against a guy with, you know, double digit championship reigns is, I think, a good place to be. There's you're not going to find more of a story between the two. They're going to flesh this out over the course of the next few weeks. I mean, Seth and Brock, there's a story there for sure, you know, no doubt. And they've been telling it well. But match wise, you know, I'm just not interested in having SummerSlam close, you know, with six F5s and half a dozen German suplexes. You know, it's like we've seen the Brock show, and I'd much rather see what, you know, what can Kofi pull out of Orton? Because I think he's lit a fire kind of in Orton that we haven't seen for a while.
I agree, and I'm not against Orton ending Kofi's title reign if Kofi gets it back and they just turn it into a feud with a blow-off match at, say, I don't know. I mean, I was going to say Survivor Series, but they usually do other formats for that. But or even on have Kofi regain the title on the first SmackDown on Fox and build up to a championship match and let Kofi have a big moment on SmackDown. I have a feeling they're going to be more thinking about Roman Reigns in a spot like that. So if Randy beats Kofi at SummerSlam, my hunch is that's to set up Reigns beating Orton, unfortunately, at on SmackDown on Fox. And I say unfortunately not to be against Randy or Reigns having a title reign. I would like to see Kofi hold the belt for even longer. I mean, I'd like to see them do a story arc into, if not past, WrestleMania next year, if there aren't any metrics that indicate it's that they're he's losing traction as a top star.
Yeah, that's going to be really the deciding factor for Kofi, is if they get to that debut on Fox and Kofi's still the champ and the ratings aren't there, there's going to definitely be a panic button push there, and something would change. But I mean, from what I hear, you know, listening to the weekly stuff, you know, ratings have not really boosted, but at least they're not floundering dramatically under Kofi's leadership. So,
yes,
you know, I think the time is now. And, you know, they kind of set a precedent with some recent champs and having longer reigns. And I like that. I don't generally like 1 month champions. And that's something from the Attitude Era that doesn't need to come back.
No, it doesn't. All right, well, good talk. Let's set the table, introduce ourselves, get to phone calls, and hit some other topics. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, following the Tuesday, July 23rd, 2019 edition of WWE SmackDown, which aired live on USA Network from Miami, Florida. I do want to first introduce the other voice that you've heard for the last 10 minutes. It's Jason Allen. I learned your middle name on Twitter, Jason Ryan Allen, who is joining me. He's an ex-WWE creative team member and a semi-frequent co-host here and guest on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast and post shows. He's here to talk SmackDown with me tonight. Jason, welcome back.
Hey, always a pleasure, Wade. And yeah, it's believe it or not, Jason Allen, common name.
Yeah.
So I was a little late to the Twitter party. Somebody squatting on Wade Keller, and that's how you ended up with your
No, I've just I've honestly from like age four always been known as the Wade Keller.
All right.
I just made that up. No. But it sounded good. Yes, you can follow me on Twitter at the Wade Keller. I'm actually surprised you got Jason Ryan Allen. I'm surprised there wasn't a Jason Ryan Allen out there who got in there before you.
I'm sure there's plenty of us out there. I just happen to be an early adopter. Not early enough, though, for Jason Allen. That one was gone.
There's probably a Jason Ryan Allen out there more famous than you who's complaining on a podcast right now about you squatting on his handle.
Yeah, if he wants to buy it, it's for sale.
There we go. All right. So our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. We're streaming live after SmackDown. As always, you can stream this show live, get your post-show analysis fix by streaming the show at wadekellerpostshow.com, or you can find a direct link to the streaming page at pwtorch.com on my SmackDown report that I run on Tuesday night. Same thing applies Monday nights with Raw. Just click on the SmackDown report at pwtorch.com. You can read what I think of the show and keep up on what's happening. And then click on the link that's either at the top or bottom of my report, usually both. You can also find a direct link to the stream if you want to stream the show at our Twitter feed, at PW Torch. That's at PW Torch. So lots of ways to find the stream. Then the whole show, including the on-site correspondent and mailbag, goes up later in the night. You can download that just about anywhere, actually pretty much anywhere that you subscribe to podcasts on podcast apps, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, BeyondPod, Dogcatcher, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, on and on and on. Anywhere there's a podcast, you can find us. Just search Wade Keller and subscribe. All right. So one note, we had a correspondent who did not go to the show. We checked with a couple prior correspondents from Miami. They chose not to attend this show. And so I think we're without a correspondent tonight. So I'm checking email because somebody was a maybe. So we looks like we're not going to have an on-site correspondent. We didn't get any new volunteers. So again, just a call to action out there. Don't assume we've got even big cities covered with correspondents where we've had other correspondents in the past. Let us know if you're attending. We don't want to miss out. Even if you just want to say in the email, make me the emergency guy. I'm not super excited about it. We would have called on you tonight. So email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. And if you're attending a Raw or SmackDown in the future, and you're willing to be our on-site correspondent, and then just let me know if you want to be the priority or the backup, because oftentimes we get multiple requests to be the on-site correspondent, and then there's nights like this where we don't have anyone lined up. So anyway, with that said, let's go to the phone banks. If you do call, you have to push 1 on your keypad in order to indicate you want to be on the show and part of the conversation. Otherwise, you're just in the background listening, which is fine. At any time after you call in, you can push 1 to indicate that you want to be in line and be a live caller on the show. Our number again, 347-215-8558. Got a bunch of people on hold, so let's start going through phone calls, and we're going to begin with Tim from Erie, Pennsylvania, our first caller up. Thanks for calling, Tim. What's on your mind about SmackDown tonight?
Hey, Wade and Jason, how are you guys doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for calling.
Doing good.
Hey, yeah, I'll start by saying that I canceled my WWE Network subscription before WrestleMania, and I probably haven't watched Raw or SmackDown in 7 months. So I had a chance to watch tonight, and I really enjoyed the program. I thought the main event was very predictable but entertaining. I did not really like the New Day commentary. I thought that was annoying. But what I really took away from the show was how good Bray Wyatt was. And I really enjoy his acting. I really like how they're reintroducing this character. So my question is, what do you think his ceiling is. Is he going to be stuck in the mid card, or can this become a main event act?
The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, I think he can be main event. I mean, let me caveat this, and I'll throw it to Jason. I think when you have a character, when you're a character wrestler that's this distinct and out of the ordinary, there's a greater chance that you're not a perennial world champion. I mean, this Bray Wyatt Fiend character is going to be more along the lines of Kane, and Kane did have some title runs, but it's not really what he's known for. I didn't ever think it was a great fit for him. You know, Mankind had a title run and you know, multiple title runs in his career, but it always sort of felt like, yeah, he's not really the guy you build around or go long-term with in that role. There's absolutely a place for those types of wrestlers in main events, challenging for world titles now and then. But to me, if there's a long life in this character, Jason, I think it's more the third or fourth from the top match on pay-per-views with a personal feud that incorporates his character playing off of a babyface act.
Well, so much like Todd Martin, I don't like to put ceilings on people, but I think the Fiend is a refreshed version of the Bray character, but I think he falls pretty much the same place on the card that he was before, which is kind of what you described. He's a sort of a perennial title challenger, forever bridesmaid kind of person, where, you know, maybe he's mixed in on the main event on, you know, a kind of an off-brand stomping grounds kind of pay-per-view. I certainly don't see the Fiend, you know, main eventing WrestleMania, but I like to be surprised. I'm excited about the character. I really am, which is why I'm hesitant to kind of, you know, kneecap him right from the start. But I think, you know, he's a bit cartoony in that way, and cartoony characters in that manner, you know, your Canes and Mankinds, like you brought up, you know, they kind of dip their toe in the main event pool, but I'm not seeing him as like a, you know, like a year, like a champion for a year or something like that. He's a threat. He's a heelish threat that the babyface conquers and then moves on to something else.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he was really good tonight though. I really liked the interruption with, you know, we're all kind of wondering what's going to happen when the vignettes are done and it doesn't have the backdrop and the puppets and all that. And I want realism when realism would be expected. You know, I don't like if a camera happens to be filming somebody looking at their phone and then suddenly somebody runs in and creates an interesting scene for television. Like, why were you filming them on their phone unless you knew this person was going to do that? And so I don't like that kind of thing. I don't like the dash cam when someone's had unexpectedly go through a window of a limousine. That's just so stupid. It breaks me out of my suspension of disbelief because pro wrestling is presented narratively for the most part and historically in every other company as there's cameras here filming something that would be happening anyway. And we're just trying to capture it. And I think pro wrestling is most effective when it's presented as we're just here filming a sport. We're filming fights. This would be happening whether the cameras are here or not. People want to find out who the best wrestler is. We got cameras. We're aiming it at the wrestlers. And that to me makes pro wrestling work. And that's why it's always been done that way in every other company with, you know, exception of something being way different like Lucha Underground. And even then they kind of have two narrative structures that they follow sort of closely, but on separate planes. With Bray Wyatt, I'm willing to accept some level of suspension of disbelief and variance from that if it gets weaved in smartly. And I thought having Bray talk about Bray and then having Bray show up and obviously pre-recorded and with edits done, do his thing on the big screen. And so I'm fine with that. I think it should be the exception, not the rule, and it should be done as smartly and smoothly as it can be. And I thought tonight was an example of it. I thought Bray was great returning to the friendly Mr. Rogers type character. And then I think it's really effective when he flips from that into the dark Fiend character, and we're starting to see more layers to that. So if there's going to be a time where I would expect he'll cut a promo in the ring, and he won't have the special effect bouncing back and forth, but he doesn't need to, you know, I mean, this could be his thing, you know, where he's always kind of on set and being pre-recorded and they use some special effects to bounce back and forth between smiling Bray and the scary Fiend. And then he otherwise wrestles or attacks people when he's actually in front of the fans. So I'm curious where they go with that. I don't know that they've thought it through or if they're just kind of winging it. I thought tonight worked with Finn.
Yeah, I would agree too. And I think sometimes we sort of forget that WWE is serving such a broad swatch of demographics. You know, it's very easy for me to, you know, as a, you know, closing in on 40, been watching since the 80s, you know, be super judgmental about stuff like that, or the Demon, things like that. But then while I'm watching, you know, I've got my 11 and my 7-year-old sitting next to me, and one thinks he's super cool, one thinks he's super scary. So, you know, like there's it's different. He has different appeal to different people. So I think over the course of all of those, you know, if you spread out his influence over all, you know, all demographics, I think he definitely has some legs, and this is a good character for him. I also really like the duality and how he's kind of like, he talks about the Fiend almost like a person with a split personality. Like like he's a totally separate person, and it'll be interesting, you know, if we see strictly the Fiend in ring, or if we get some of the Mr. Rogers Bray matches as well, you know, kind of like what Finn Balor does now, where he sort of goes back and forth, except for Finn is much more like, yeah, I just get more aggressive and I put on paint, whereas Bray is like actually crazy.
Yep. Yep. I agree. It's a little bit like the boyfriend of Gypsy in the HBO did the documentary on it. I think it was Mom Dearest or something like that. And then the Netflix series that came out called The Act. And, you know, there's the dual personality, the nice boyfriend who also says, oh, but I have this other side, and he will kill ruthlessly and without remorse if you need that person to show up. And I think Bray's got that, you know, he's playing off of that real life thing, that, you know, that real life condition that unfortunately some people have, but doing so in a pro wrestling context that works. Tim, back to you. Any follow up on that or another topic?
No, all I'll say is that, you know, I canceled my subscription a few months ago and I haven't missed it. But after tonight, I'm excited for SummerSlam. I'm not going to dedicate 7 hours to watching it, but I will re-up my subscription. And I'm excited to see KO and Shane. I think it'll just be entertaining. I love that KO's using the stunner. I think Kofi and Orton will be a great match, and I'm excited about Bray. So I appreciate you taking my call, and I've been VIP for a long time now. I haven't given that up. I listen almost every day, so go VIP, and I appreciate the content and you taking my call.
Tim, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. All right, we will go to our second call, area code 801, and then after that, 310 and 516 are in line. Everyone else, hold tight, too. 801, you're up. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Derek from Utah.
Hey, Derek, good to hear from you again. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight?
I thought it was a good show. I thought the strength of the show was the mic work. I thought, and I don't know if it just stuck out today, but I think over the last 2 or 3 weeks, the mic work has been better. I mean, the guys have more emotion. You don't have as much of kind of the what seems like written for them, rehearsed, and then regurgitated verbiage. I think it seems a lot more natural, and it sticks out when it's more natural, and I thought that was the strength of today's show. Did you guys see the same?
Yeah. And what promo tonight or promo stood out to you fitting that category? Because that can be kind of a launching point, too, for our conversation.
Kofi and Orton, as you guys talked about at the top of the show, I thought that seemed real. I mean, they're obviously playing off history, and you want to reward fans for remembering things and internalizing things and thinking that they're important. I thought Dolph Ziggler, Shawn Michaels, and I think my favorite part was when Shawn grabbed the mic and he stood about, you know, 12 inches away from Dolph, and he talked slowly and he talked quietly, but it said a lot. And that's my favorite promo in pro wrestling, is when guys stop yelling and stop trying to project and they just get right next to somebody and they speak truth. And it gives you that shiver, you know, and I got that shiver when Shawn did that tonight. And obviously he's an expert at getting an emotional response from an audience, and it got an emotional response from me. And it got me somewhat intrigued for a Dolph and Miz match that otherwise I would be less than thrilled about. So that was successful. And then KO, I think he continues his work on the mic, and he seems motivated. He seems enthusiastic about what he's doing, and it projects. And like all good spoken material in pro wrestling, there's a contagion that you can feel through the screen, and I feel it when he gets on the mic and he starts yelling or he looks excited, and I feel excited because of that.
Yeah, cool. So, Jason, yeah, what stood out from what Derek pointed out about tonight's show, and do you agree with him that this felt like a better show when it comes to promos and verbal exchanges with wrestlers?
I mean, I feel like it kind of had to, because wrestling-wise, this was a pretty light show, minus what we got out of Joe and Kofi. All the other matches were relatively short, or as Derek said, you know, predictable for the main event. I really enjoyed the exchange between Dolph and Sean as well. He kind of went in sort of Jake the Snake style, and this was really the first time I think that that we've discussed, you know, the fact that Sean kind of broke his word and came out of retirement, albeit in a tag match, but you know came out of retirement, and you know, I don't feel like he completely embarrassed himself, but I think maybe he does, you know, and what he said there really struck me, you know, and I thought they had a really good exchange. When you watch that, though, it's like the whole time you're thinking, well, we're not going to get Sean and Dolph, so my emotions are wasted here. We're going to get Miz instead. And did you notice how they've been, like, slipping Miz as a legend in there, you know, more so? Like, Dolph, when he came out, he was like, I'm in the ring with two of the greatest of all time, and it's like they're trying to move Miz into this like elder statesman's role, and that kind of stood out to me.
Glad you brought that up, because I've been noticing this shift too in the verbiage that wrestlers are given and the way Miz is presenting himself. He's sort of this mini John Cena or John Cena Jr. Like, he's still but you know, rewind 6 years, like, he wasn't as big as Cena. But he's got a reality show, and I think he's enjoying that. He's done his WWE movies, and he's had fun doing that, and he referenced that tonight. And he's being talked about as, like you said, kind of a guy who's a legacy star. You know, they're putting him in that category now in the way that they talk about him. And I'm watching this, and I'm just kind of thinking, is Miz winding down being the workhorse full-time house show guy? Like, is he trying to transition to being around sometimes, not around other times, because of movies, reality TV, and just having the clout to get away with it? So it's something to watch, and it's fine. I mean, I am for wrestlers shortening their careers of full-time action and giving new wrestlers a chance, but then meaning more when they're around less often, but protected as they shift into that role.
I enjoyed the fire out of Miz when he kind of shut down Dolph. You know, I thought that was good. All in all, I mean, yeah, it was a good mic work night. The Orton Kofi exchange stands out, and it's right up against that Shawn Michaels. You know, just because you don't see him every week, you hardly ever see him. So Shawn is going to stand out. And to Derek's point, you know, I think it sounds so genuine because you know, when I was there, you don't really hand Shawn a script. You know, like, you don't. You go to him and you say, okay, here's the basic vibe. And then he's like, got it, you know, and that's it, you know, and those three guys probably worked out that whole segment by themselves. And it felt like, you know, based on what happened in the match right after that, that they probably went a little heavy, which is the kind of like the sacrifice you make for not tightly scripting the show.
Yeah. What do you make of Ziggler calling out Goldberg and talking, well, you're not as bad as Goldberg's wrestling? It's almost become a punchline, you know, for him, but a go-to line. Is that a personal issue that he has with Goldberg, or like where he's trying to just demean him, or is he trying to set up a match where Goldberg, you know, comes back at a big event and gives him the jackhammer?
It seems more like a ask for forgiveness, not permission kind of thing on Dolph. I feel like he's, you know, kind of just thinking like he's going to, you know, speak to the smarks a little bit with that. And, you know, that's kind of been his whole thing, you know, like with heel and his Twitter handle. You know, Ziggler's always been kind of like, you know, hey, let's all peek behind the curtain a little bit here. And you guys all know that I'm the best actual wrestler, right? And that if this was a shoot, I would hold the title because I'm the greatest, you know? So that's kind of been like part of his vibe. But I don't know. I mean, maybe they're trying to, guilt Goldberg into doing a sort of an Undertaker thing and coming back for another match just to right that debacle that we saw in Saudi.
I will say this, if it's just a running gag and Ziggler just does that, I want Ziggler to stick around for years to come, because I'm all for taking digs at Goldberg like that. I don't know why I get a kick out of it. I guess I kind of know why. So is Michaels the right guy, or is Ziggler the right guy for Michaels to be doing an angle with? I mean, because let's take a step back here. We're talking about getting, quote, excited about Miz and Ziggler. Is that really good? Like, is that the right use of TV time for, I mean, Ziggler's turning 39 next week. Happy early birthday, Dolph. Sorry if we say anything that hurts your feelings on our conversation here. I mean, you got Miz at 38 years old, Ziggler going on 39, and Michaels is cashing in a rare appearance, the novelty of seeing Michaels on TV, and it's not for anything. You know, like, I mean, it's Miz Ziggler, no matter what they do to make it feel like, oh, I'm kind of excited to see it now, that's like it's going from a 0 to a 2.5 or a 3 or 4. It's not like a big deal. To me, like, Steve Austin would never come back to set up Ziggler Miz. You know, like, so, mm-hmm. And Michaels is a big deal. So, I found myself enjoying it, and I thought it was good. And yes, the Ziggler, you know, playing off of Ziggler wanting to be a Shawn Michaels, or, you know, the Shawn Michaels wannabe type stuff, that resonates. There's truth to it. But is that really worth it to spend that Michaels card, the HBK card, on Miz and Ziggler? Or for that matter, have Michaels come out of retirement to face Ziggler? I mean, I guess maybe that's more exciting just because Ziggler could probably have a really good match, and it's a match with years ago would have wanted to see.
Yeah, I hear you. And I feel you and I had a very similar conversation. I feel back in November when we were previewing the Super Showdown, because it was like, you're cashing in the Shawn Michaels card on two guys that are already retired. You know, like, you have to, when you do something like that, you have to be able to get the equity out of that for years, you know, that there's a value there, which is why, you know, it was like, it was bad that they had Brock be the one to beat the streak, because it's like, he's not around to gloat about it. I mean, Heyman's there, but you know, it's like, you don't get the mileage that you invested when you're 20 and 0. So, you know, it's, I feel like this is like part two of them sort of brushing Miz up against a star of the past, like when they did that with Flair. You know, that was like the first thing I thought when I saw this sort of, you know, tandem on the side. It was like, I remember when Miz started doing the figure four, and it was like, okay, well, let's buddy him up with Flair. And you know, now they're, you know, kind of snuggling him up with Shawn, and it's like, the Miz is decent enough to make that program by itself. You don't need Shawn Michaels in it. So
yeah.
If you're going to have him there, you know, have him on Miz TV, but have somebody that's, you know, Michaels referenced early in that promo that, you know, he used to feel like, you know, the old guy should go away. And, you know, somebody should have come out and said something along that line, you know, somebody from, you know, like an NXT call up or something, like, you know, like have a, you know, Velveteen Dream or something come out and debut like that, you know.
Yeah.
A guy that can get mileage out of it for the next 20 years, not Ziggler, who's, you know, doing comedy shows on the weekends. And, you know, Ziggler's got one foot already out the door.
I was, you know, a lot of people are speculating, emailing and tweeting about, is Daniel Bryan going to aim higher and aim for Shawn Michaels? Shawn Michaels announced for commentary tonight. Kind of a weird switch with Michaels not doing commentary, but New Day being there. Byron Saxton, Tom Phillips announced his father died last week. That's why he wasn't on the show. Our condolences go out to Byron. And so David Otunga sat in for Saxton, and then Xavier and Big E sat in for Michaels. And it was kind of weird to announce Michaels for commentary, but then to switch him to Miz TV. I'm kind of curious if we hear what the original plan was and why it was switched. But Michaels was supposed to be part of the toast to Raw at the end of Raw last night, and he just stood on the stage next to Triple H and then never really participated in the segment that where Flair, then Hogan, then Austin were all spotlighted. So it was kind of a weird couple days for Michaels. But to do Miz TV, it seems like they did something they couldn't have done in anything close to the same way if Michaels had been on commentary, unless Ziggler was in a match or interrupted Miz TV and attacked Miz and Michaels jumped up and dropped his headset. I mean, nothing really comes to mind. So it's just kind of weird to announce it for commentary, but then to shift into this elaborate miskit.
Yeah, I agree. And not to to switch the topic to Raw, but yeah, it was really odd with, you know, they're kind of presenting like WWE was like, hey, this is the Mount Rushmore, right? We talk about that a lot. Here's the four guys, right?
Yeah.
And Flair gets to say nothing. And Shawn Michaels is a wallflower. Hogan dumps, you know, about as Hogan of a promo as you can. And then Steve runs out of time telling stories that, you know, only the people in the ring know about. So I thought that whole thing was kind of a mess. But yeah, I mean, I wish that Shawn would have been on commentary because he could have helped a lot of these guys get over the course of the 2 hours, you know, just doing commentary and doing color. And New Day really tarnished the first 20 minutes of this show with their campiness. It was horrible.
They were just clowning. I mean, they were obnoxiously clowning. First, you couldn't hear Xavier because he's not talking into the mic. He's not projecting. Everything is under his breath and as an aside. I literally couldn't hear anything he was saying for the first like 10 minutes he was out there. And then they're just laughing at stuff that isn't meant to be laughed at. They're going, Apollo, where are your friends? Apollo, where are your friends? And it's like, you two are sitting right there. He's being attacked, and you're drawing attention to the fact that you're doing nothing to help, and you're mocking a babyface for having no friends, or on some meta level, you're mocking the promotion for not having a babyface come out to save him. And why? Because they want to get themselves over as what? Clowns. I mean, it's just I didn't like it. It did not contribute to the show. I wonder, I have no idea if they're supposed to be there the whole show and they got the hook and Michael Cole happened to be backstage and like sent Michael out there, but it was weird. I mean, why does Cole need to be out there? I mean, Phillips and Otunga can call the show. You don't need Michael. So that whole thing was weird, but yeah, New Day I lost respect for their instincts on how to not make it about them. And still, because you can make it about other people, enhance angles as color commentators, and still give yourself a boost by picking your spots. And they just made it all about them in a way that absolutely undercut what everybody else was doing.
Yeah. What it felt like to me was it felt like two guys Twitch streaming while they played WWE 2K19. You know, like you're trying to put over Shinsuke, right? He's your kind of, you know, trying to heat him back up after he disappeared for a while. The Kinshasa is a relatively protected finisher, and they're like, oh no, he's going to hit him with this finisher. You know, it was bad. It was really bad. And speaking of like Apollo Crews, like, did you catch the momentous rising star Apollo Crews?
Was that all about? He called him astounding during ring introductions. He called him the momentous rising star during the buildup to the match. It was so over the top. I still, in retrospect, don't get what that was all about.
Just to lose. Right?
Yeah.
Just to lose. Yeah, it's the booking of that whole like first half hour with Mandy and Sonya totally botching their line. I mean, it was bad. The show was bad until the Ali promo and then Miz TV, and then everything from there on was decent. But yeah, it was a rough first 40 minutes or whatever.
I want to talk about Rose and Sonya. I might remember later. I don't want to leave our callers hanging too long here. But yeah, that was whoever was producing that was not paying attention, because there is no way that should have made air. It was an abomination of a scripted back and forth. And whoever was in charge of that included, by the way, including Sonya, seemed to realize like, what, you know, this didn't go well, but you know, you're meant to just finish the scene. We'll worry later. But that it's almost like they ran the wrong cut. Anyway, I'm going to go off on that if I get going. So let's go back to phone calls. 310, then 516, and several more on deck. So hold tight. Here we go. 310, state your name and where you're calling from.
This is Chris in Los Angeles. Hey, Wade. Hey, Jason. I actually didn't mind SmackDown tonight. I really don't watch WWE program like. I don't keep the channel on it. I'll kind of like flip the channels. And I really did. There were things I liked and there were things that I didn't like with Bray Wyatt. I'm willing to see where it goes, but it almost kind of seems like exactly the same character he was doing before he took his leave, with the exception of, you know, he just does the pretend to be like nice in a snarky way, in a different kind of, it's a different variation of the same thing where he like is nice and but smarmy and then attacks a baby face. It doesn't seem that different than me, to me, but at the very least I'm willing to see where it goes.
Jason, anything you want to respond to on that?
No, I mean, I agree with you. I feel like it's different enough that Bray feels kind of reborn. He's been gone for a long time. I do appreciate, though, that the Mr. Rogers version of Bray, just for lack of a better explanation, he's much less – he's still meta, and he's still – you know, kind of riddly, but he talks a lot less community theater style as the former Bray. And, you know, I don't know if the Fiend is going to talk at all or if he's just, you know, this kind of psycho. That remains to be seen. If he does cut promos, I hope that they're vastly different from what we're getting out of Bray now. I feel, like we said earlier in the show, that the, you know, the potential and the ceiling is pretty similar to the Bray we've seen before, but I think this one's a bit more multifaceted, whereas, you know, I would kind of be hot and cold on the old Bray. You know, he would have certain programs where I thought they were really good, and then other programs where it was like, this is, you know, you're recycling the riddles here, Bray. And,
right.
You know, there's a lot of aspects to Bray that we never really paid off. You know, like, I feel like there was a lot of meat on the bone still with that character, and hopefully, you know, some of those ideas get fleshed out with this new iteration.
Chris, anything you want to add?
No, I just agree. And like I said, at the very least, I'm willing to see where it goes, where I haven't been like that with a lot of WWE stuff. And I also wanted to mention Kofi Kingston and Randy Orton. I like the way they did the work shoot stuff tonight, because they did it in a way where they're drawing off of what a lot of us fans, especially us internet fans, see as real, as Orton kind of holding Kofi back, but they didn't go the route of you yelled stupid in a match and stuff like that. They just kind of kept it like based in real life without, you know, just calling out the whole thing as fake, like what they sometimes do. So I really appreciated that. And that's already my favorite feud of the summer before I've even seen anything else. So, I hope it lasts. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Thank you, you guys.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate it. All right, we'll go next to 516, then 732, and 732 are the next two up. 516, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, this is Scott from Long Island. What's up, fellas?
Not too much. Thanks for calling, Scott. What's on your mind tonight?
So, first, I was there at the Coliseum last week for Bray's return, and I was lucky enough actually to be backstage. And you know what? I kind of agree with the last call. I would love Bray to be a main event guy, and if a main event means he'll win, you know, a championship in the next 4 years, like he did with his first character, like maybe that, but I just don't see him going above a mid-card level. The thing that hit me was like the strobe light effect and the power goes out. Like it's going to be, I feel like this is the beginning of the hokiness and it's only going to get worse. And even though Bray might be more into it and have more ideas, it all ends with Vince. So I just, as much as I would like it to, you know, it's different. We'll all give it a chance and maybe it'll be interesting, but it's going to have that weird, it's going to just get weirder to where it can't be taken seriously, I think.
I think from a live arena experience, there is a problem here in that having workers run to ringside and flash and wiggle strobe lights at them or spotlights at them to create an effect is, for decades, you know, in between matches, they'd go put pyro on the ring post for Kane, even if he wasn't announced and was going to interfere in a match. They telegraph stuff. It's unfortunate. I don't think it's as necessary as they make it. They, you know, I would say they're aware of the trade-off, but they do other things where they seem completely unaware of the trade-off. But yeah, I mean, if it's this elaborate thing where clearly WWE production is behind this spooky surprise appearance from The Fiend, that's going to undercut what they're trying to do a lot. Jason, what do you think of that, the kind of the pro and con of taking that approach of having workers flashing spotlights when the Fiend surprisingly interferes in something and shows up and beats up a legend.
Yeah, I mean, if you let it take, you know, if you think about it that deeply, then I feel like the gimmick might already be kind of failing a little bit. The idea with good pro wrestling is that you can suspend that disbelief, and you have to really kind of work for it a little bit more in a character like this. You know, I thought that WWE had kind of moved past that kind of stuff, you know, and we had entered into more of a realistic era. And then we get Undertaker coming out on Raw a few weeks ago and fake lightning, you know, coming down. And it's just, you know, like that kind of stuff is, to me, again, we spoke on it earlier, but to me as a, you know, grown man who's watched this stuff forever, yeah, that rings false and it feels silly. But to the kids who are, you know, sometimes in a lot of households, the deciders of the recreational funds, that stuff's cool, you know. So we have to look at it on both sides. I think if you're watching it live, if you're there live, then absolutely the surprise of Bray is gone as soon as you see those guys run out with the spotlights, because you know it's there's no way for them to mask it. So I think that it's a real kind of fine balancing act between keeping up the facade of imagination and being realistic.
Yeah, I think for fans in the building, you know, you can't forget about them. You know, I mean, when Seth, you know, Seth was standing over a month or two ago, whoever it was, with a chair, and he was frozen and posing. And then he was told by a director, go. And then because they were back from the commercial break, and then he started swinging the chair and hitting whoever it was. I mean, that's just awful. Like, I mean, it's just, how can you go to that show and ever look at wrestling the same way again when they pulled the curtain back that much? So if I'm WWE, I would treat the fans in the building as if they're as important as the TV viewers at home in terms of creating an illusion of spontaneity. And when you do that in a building, it takes a lot of the fun away. All right, we'll go to the first of our 732 callers next. Oh, you know what? Hold on. Scott, we had background noise. That's why I put you on hold. Anything you want to close with or follow up on?
I'll just give you a couple of rapid fires so I don't take up too much time. First, I know the reason they went the way they did with Kofi. I just thought another interesting idea, if they ever wanted to be so different, would be if he picked Big E with Woods as the referee just to give his boys a shot. And, like, that would be a cool story. And the Fire and Desire thing, like, I like them as wrestlers. You know, I like Mandy's, like, running knee is probably one of the most devastating knees in the entire company. And I like Sonya Deville, but that promo tonight was awful.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was.
Lastly,
all right, Scott.
I almost got thrown out for getting too close to gorilla position, but that's a story for next time.
Okay, sounds good. All right, well, drop me an email, Scott. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Yep, you bet. All right, 732, you are up. Go ahead and state your name if you heard a beep, and let us know where you're calling from.
Hi, this is Dan from North Brunswick, New Jersey. Happy year.
Hey, Dan.
Listener, first-time caller. So it's great to be on the show. Hi, Wade and Jason.
Hey, Dan.
So far, so good.
Yeah. So, you know, overall, I thought it was a really good show. I guess it felt like a lot of the stuff was changed last minute in regards to, like, advertising, like Daniel Bryan and Sean on commentary and kind of switching all that up. So I just thought that was interesting, the kind of, like, last-minute change and whatnot. But I was really confused with the whole Charlotte, Ember Moon, Bailey stuff that's going on, and I guess Charlotte's segment of, I guess she's challenging another female like superstar, and you know, is that going to be, you know, like the return of maybe like a Sasha, or like, you know, maybe I just thought of like Trish Stratus from Toronto. I don't know if they want to bring back a legend since they're on like the legend theme, but I just want to get your thoughts on, like, do you think they're making a triple threat, or is it going towards like Charlotte facing someone outside of this, and kind of what the deal with all that was? It just happened so fast.
Yeah, good question. We haven't really talked much about that. It was a weird segment with the women where you have a match with Ember Moon and Charlotte. First ever one-on-one on SmackDown. And Bayley walks out, and being her kind of smug heelish self, unintentionally so, I assume, leading to a quick roll-up with Ember pinning Charlotte in a match where Charlotte loses, but it means nothing. Ember wins, it means nothing, because it's a total fluke. And Bayley coming out wasn't really, I don't think, to Ford Bailey's character, but just to create an excuse for Charlotte to lose in a way that means nothing. Again, I'm not a fan of that booking. Now, like you said, Jason, maybe the prior segment went long and they had to go to that, you know, more quickly because they really want to be at a certain place at the top of hour number two, you know, at the top of the hour. And they wanted, you know, Kofi to be doing his announcement. So, you know, some slack given to them for that. But I assume that was probably going to be the finish anyway. It's just they were going to wrestle a little bit longer first. But in the end, I don't really know. I mean, if there's a payoff with Charlotte saying I'm going to face somebody at SummerSlam to prove that I deserve a title shot, I mean, that's fine. I don't know who's left on the SmackDown roster, who that would be, unless they're going to call up or introduce somebody new. Because, I mean, it's like Liv Morgan and Lana are the only two unaccounted for who are healthy right now. I mean, I guess Asuka or Kairi Sane, I think, are SmackDown wrestlers. So, I mean, she could take on one of them. But, I don't know what to make of it yet, but I thought it was a little clunky tonight.
I agree. This whole segment was just a debacle. Bayley comes out and then it's like if I never see another schoolboy pin or roll up pin, that I'd be okay with that because the 24/7 belt is like that's all that ever happened. I'm sitting there and I'm watching this and I'm typing some notes for the show, and Ember rolls out of the ring and she's smiley and I'm typing to myself, Ember shouldn't be happy with that at all. And then she did what I thought was cool. You know, she kind of tossed Bayley in and let Charlotte, you know, have a go at her. And then she came back in. The whole thing was just weird though. And, you know, and then Charlotte's backstage and she's like, I don't have to request anything. But then later on in the same promo, she's demanding to be included in SummerSlam. And, you know, if we're thinking back like 4 months ago, Charlotte was just unceremoniously introduced into the triple threat for the, you know, with Ronda. So, you know, Charlotte needs to play off of that if she's going to go that route. You know, if she's going to just sort of like celebrity her way into matches. But to your point, like, yeah, who is she going to go against? I mean, there's nobody left on the roster. SmackDown is depleted with the women, and I don't know where she goes. And I assume, you know, that ends up becoming a triple threat match, which is, you know, again, that's like the roll ups. If I can go a couple years without seeing a multi-person match.
Yeah. Yeah. I would much rather have seen Ember and Bayley do something to promote their match without involving Charlotte and get us to care more. Even if that just means focusing on Ember Moon's story and having her cut a promo or do a video feature, let us get to know her a little bit better. I mean, in a way, it's a little too late to give someone a title match and then start letting us know what she's all about, other than being sad about a video game system being broken by two nasty people backstage. But otherwise, we don't know anything about her. So, I mean, this didn't help. She was happy about a fluke win that she had no reason to be proud of. So, yeah it wasn't a good night for them. Dan, anything else you want to add?
Just to stay on, like, the women's division for a second. Yeah, the Sonya Rose thing was just confusing, but do you think they're moving towards like a triple threat tag team match with like Asuka and Kairi Sane, or just going to completely forget about them and just have like Sonya and Rose just make the win and just put them on for SummerSlam?
I'll echo Jason's comment. Please no triple threat matches. I mean, just, everybody doesn't need to be on every show. And if you're Sonya Deville and Mandy Rose, you don't need to be on SummerSlam. We need to get away from this idea that everyone's third grader is looking for participation ribbons on the big events. The job of a wrestling promoter is to serve the fans, not serve the wrestlers. And I don't mean they should disregard the wrestlers or not care, but you don't just put wrestlers on a show just to force them onto the show. I think podcasts are better when there's two or three hosts and co-hosts. There's some weeks where somebody was like, I want to be on the show. And maybe there could be six other people who'd want to be on the show. Wouldn't make for a good podcast, but it might make some people happy that they got to be on, you know, the post WrestleMania podcast, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Well, only one person can, because it really turns into a mess with a caller format and all that. If we have more than one co-host or two people in a roundtable format, I mean, the job is to serve the listeners, not everybody who'd like to be part of those shows. So that's my, like, you know, bring it home as an example. So please, just one-on-one matches, one-on-one title matches, two-on-two tag team matches, and stay away from let's get everybody involved. And then if the other reason isn't, well, we're not doing it to get everyone involved, We just don't think anyone will care about the match that we booked one-on-one or two-on-two. Well, then do your job better. Don't use the adding a new a third player or team to the mix as a crutch to make up for a lack of planning ahead and getting us to care about the wrestlers who you're booking in title matches. Just do your job. So that's my anti-triple threat lecture. Dan, anything else for us?
No, couldn't agree more. I prefer the one-on-ones and everything like that. So it's great being on. So thanks, Wade and Jason.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks for listening. Thanks for calling again. Or
thank
please
you.
Do call again. I don't want to get ahead of myself. All right, cool. We'll go to 732 here. We'll wrap up the caller portion here. Go ahead, 732. State your name and where you're calling from. 732. Oh, this is good.
Is this a 1998 Kane calling?
It's maybe someone vacuuming their car. Maybe he's drilling. Sounds like he's drilling something. I don't know. We'll probably edit all this off. I'm kind of curious how long it goes on and what's happening. 732. Maybe he's brushing. Maybe he's got a really loud electric toothbrush.
Maybe. Yeah. Been on hold for a while.
All right. We had our fun there. All right. So we'll wrap up the caller portion there, and we will come back maybe with an onsite correspondent, but certainly a mailbag. So thank you, everybody who listened to the live stream and especially to our callers. And if you want to be part of the show in the future, don't forget to visit pwtorch.com and click on my Raw report or my SmackDown report, respectively, on Monday and Tuesday nights, or check our Twitter feed at PWTorch for a direct link to the live stream. You can also find the homepage for this show at WadeKellerPostShow.com. That's for the live streams. If you want to listen to the shows after they're fully edited and produced with the mailbag segments and on-site correspondence, just subscribe. Search Wade Keller and subscribe to the red brand, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, to hear the full shows. I'll be back with Jason with more right after this.
Don't just listen to PW Torch's brand of wrestling coverage. Read it, too, every day at pwtorch.com. Join me Monday nights for my live coverage of Raw, Tuesday nights for my live coverage of SmackDown, Sunday nights for my live